This is a Pinball News production.
Okay, everybody's been sitting a long time. Stand up for a second, shake it out. Just take a moment, shake your arm, shake your legs, stretch out. I'm going to be talking for a long time. All right, sit down. Okay, tonight's going to be a three-part experience. I'm going to give you some impressions on pinball. We're going to talk a little bit about pinball history. Then I'm going to show you some pictures that I could find in my archives, which were hard to find because I kind of just send somebody looking for some pictures because I'm living here right now and all my stuff's in Lexington. And then I'm going to give you a couple secrets to success in business for free. I also did work for Bally. My father was vice president of Bally in the 70s and 80s, and I worked in the warehouse and I unpacked containers of pinball machines. So when you guys talk about games like Silver Ball Mania, I unpacked containers of Silver Ball Mania. If you want to talk about Seaberg jukeboxes, one day my father said to me, "We have 17 containers of parts coming. You have to figure out what they are," because they were just thrown in containers. So if anybody needs to talk Seaberg parts, I'm your man. Good evening, pinball fans, young and old. Rob, Bridget, Jaden, 28 years. How have you, and Mike, for 28 years, stayed with the program, managed the effort, kept the passion, made a home for pinball fans from around the world? Join me, please. Amazing. Amazing. 28 years. Now, last night I was playing Time Machine with somebody. He said it was the first time he ever played the game. I beat him. So this is kind of fun. I said, well, I designed it. And I was looking at the play field, and on it said, designed by Design Team 28. Now, that had two significances. Point one was we kind of always thought Williams was this giant monolith. They had 27 design teams, and we had them sound like we were big, so we said we had 28. We were the 28th design team. We must have had 27 before that design team. And I was also 28 years old when Gary and Shelley and I got together and started the company. So that was the double entendre there. My oldest daughter is now 26, so it's kind of fun. Think back and look at her 26 years later and go, in two more years, she will start her pinball company. Shelley Sachs, our dear friend, recently got married to her long-term boyfriend. And we're happy about that after many decades of love. I want to introduce you to someone that you've probably all never met. Now, at some point in time when I started making pinball machines, we did all these cut screens. Everyone today was going, where's Margaret Hudson? Where's Margaret Hudson? Where's Margaret Hudson? That Margaret was the person that cut all the little films and cut all the screens. There's this guy named Larry Plotzker sitting right here who helped come up with the first four-color play field that you see on all your pinballs today. So if you've never met Larry, give him a hand. That's 10 years ago he really did that work. And last night, I had a great experience. Michael, thank you for a copy of your book. I sat there reading and looking and reminiscing. And if you don't have Michael's latest pinball book, it truly is a great piece of work. And Michael, just thank you for taking the time to memorialize what we all spent our careers doing. Now, I had a good morning this morning. I hope you would all have the kind of day like I had today. This morning I woke up. My son, who's sitting here, was on the front of the Wall Street Journal. My daughter, who participated in the Olympics, was on a box of Wheaties. My new wife was on the cover of Playboy magazine. And my ex-wife was on the back of the milk carton. It was a perfect day. Perfect way to start the day. So anyway, I don't get to come here as often as I used to. You know, life kind of sometimes just gets in the way. You get busy, family matters, things take priority. But last night was a great night. I saw many old friends from my first days at Williams and from being in being here and being in the various stages of my pinball career. I saw Ken Fidesna. I saw Steve Ritchie. And by the way, make no doubt about it, Steve, I hope you can hear this. I'm going to speak really, really loud. You're the king of pinball, and don't you forget it, okay? You know, Steve, I thought about you last night, and I'll talk about the other people I saw. I'm going to jump to something in my speech. I was thinking about pinball. Now, pinball, 30 years ago, we had arcades. Pinballs would be in bars. Right now, Steve, one of the first pinball games I probably really fell in love with was Firepower. That game drove me insane. I played it for hours. Lock one, lock two, drain, game over. Lock one, game two, drain, game over. And I thought about it. And Steve, you don't get credit for something that every person talks about in the world today. You created the first like button because I liked playing that game, and when I was done, I hit it again and I played it again, and you created the like button. Okay? So when you played a pinball machine and you had fun, or you didn't get that multi-ball, and you liked it, you pushed the like button and you played again. So before there was Facebook, we had a different kind of like button, right? Because pinball was sort of the social network, right? We play with our friends. Gary would say, I build games to get them drunk and keep them drunk in the bar. Now, today we don't say that because if somebody gets going to crash, we then have liability issues. He just wants them to go there and just meet people. And now we have, you know, Match.com or whatever. But we did have a like button, and we still have a like button because when you like that game, you get to vote and play it again and push that button again. So think about it, Steve. You helped invent the like button, too. Now, I feel it's a bit like Romper Room. I saw George last night and Steve and Mark and Ed and Borgie. Now, I'll tell you about John Borg. That's a fine guy right there. 6 years ago, when you guys were down here at the Pinball Expo, he was sitting on the couch with Ed Cibula when he wasn't doing so well, when he was on his last days. John Borg sat on the couch with Ed Cibula a lot of days. So, Borgie, I remember that. You're a good man. And I remember your first play field, too. I have a picture of it up here today, which we'll see in a little bit. Now, Defender Pinball, that's an interesting story. That is sort of like selling somebody the Brooklyn Bridge. Now, if you can imagine, I had this great idea. I had this relationship with Williams. I was building my first video game at the time. It's called Playball. Probably can see it on MAME. Really sucks. But, you know, got my foot in the door, came up with this idea. Williams somehow gave me money. And then I said to them, hey, I got this great idea. You own Defender. Defender is the biggest game in the market at the time. And I will let you pay me for the right to make a game based on something you already own. And they said, okay, that's a great idea, and we did it. So if you see, and then they didn't want to, like, give me credit for it. And I did do a bit of a napkin sketch and talk about baiters and swarmers and other things. But if you look by the pop bumper, you'll see something that says, certain design services furnished to Williams Electronics, Inc. by Logical Highs, which was my company. So you actually know that I really did have something to do with that at the time. But that was a great idea. It's like, marketing, I'll get people to buy shit they already own. It is still working to this day. This past year, we also lost, you know, Steve Kordek. But we also lost Neil Falconer. I don't know if any of you knew Neil. Neil worked with us. He worked at Bally. He did Spy Hunter. He did a lot of other sounds, a lot of other games. He did a Baby Pac-Man, I believe. It was one of his games. And Neil, unfortunately, died in a very tragic car accident in Reno this past year. And he worked for me at IGT for about 13 years. So if you guys play South Park, if you play that Starship Troopers in there, no, Neil did some of that code, did all those gray light shows and did a lot of things. So I know we like to remember those who we've lost in pinball. Neil was one of those really quiet guys that did an awful lot of work and probably worked on 25 games for us. You know, it's interesting. Yeah, thank you, Neil. It's interesting. We start companies, you know. We have a lot of companies that we started. We remember the Dan Langlois of the world, or remember the Nick Wage, or people that come through our lives, because our company is a time, especially when you start a pinball company. Jack, you're probably seeing this right now. You work long hours, and you spend a lot of time with people, and people come through your lives, and you lose them sometimes. So there'll be a lot of times you'll see, you know, on Time Machine last night, I remember we wrote, this game was dedicated to Sam and Harry. And it said, friends, founders, and fathers, right? Because I think Gary had two fathers in both of those gentlemen, both his dad and in Harry. So, you know, pinball, there's a lot of hidden things and a lot of things we do and put in for our kids. And, you know, you'll see we always kind of snuck something in there at some point in time. Larry DeMar and I met at Williams 30 years ago. We are still in business today. Larry's one of my best friends in the world and a dear friend in my life. You know, we've gone through video games and novelty games and pinball machines, and we made a TV game show with Arsenio Hall and Mark Burnett, and we're about to launch a new product this week, which you'll get a sneak peek at the end of the night. We started a little company called Spooky Cool Labs. Brian Eddy, who you all know from Medieval Madness, is our head game designer. The reason he's not here right now is he's working real hard to get our first game launched. So Brian does send and his best. We're about to launch a game that's going to go on Facebook. Costs probably close to $10 million. Do any of you know Chuck Hess? Chuck's kind of a big pinball enthusiast and a super incredible programmer and tech guy, and Chuck's our CTO. And where we meet Chuck, we met him through pinball. You know, I thought a lot about Stern. I think probably one of the most interesting things that we ever did at Stern was run about 100 fiberglass cows down our production line. I think there's a picture somewhere in that as the cows pulled up on the flatbed bed after someone had hosed them off, and someone actually thought that they were real cows and they were calling the ASPCA on us. We also had a great experience. I don't know if anyone ever heard about this, but I call it the Great Helicopter Debacle. Now, some people, you know what, you know, there are certain holidays where people give up food for Lent or other things like that. And we had a little problem a couple of years back in the factory where all of a sudden, you know, I think we were making, what, Borky, about 250 games a day. It was about 150 degrees in the factory. Our employees hadn't eaten. And one woman fainted. It was Ash Wednesday. One woman hadn't eaten. She faints. Next thing you know, they are fainting. They're dropping like flies. Next thing you know, it's like this. Helicopters over our factory. Channel 5 News, Channel 7 News, Channel, you know, they think they have solder pots. You know, there's poison in the air. We were shut down for like a month. EPA is in there. We had a guy walking around with a stethoscope and a white lab coat for about a month. And we finally just discovered none of the employees ate for a day before that occurred. I call Gary that Tuesday every year, and I remind him to bring in food. Little stories that you probably never heard about on our pinball company. Let me comment for a minute before we get to the slideshow about last evening. Now, I haven't been here in a couple of years. I was so pleasantly pleased with the state of pinball last night. Because it's not pinball as I knew pinball. What I saw were people embracing their passion for pinball. just like the car business years ago, that people would embrace a particular brand, and then you, all of a sudden you have the SEMA show and customizing, and it was amazing to walk around and see really cool mirrors for the inside of the pinball. I know you guys are back there right now. Or it was really neat to see powder-coated parts or high-gloss parts or LED lights or all these things. It reminded me a lot of Bruce Myers, who made the Myers Manix years ago. It was he took Volkswagens and turned them into something else. I saw one pinball machine that reminded me of the first pinball machine Gary and I made. And Mark, no disrespect, but we parted out a Road King, which you probably know at the time because it's the only thing we could buy, and we used all Mark's parts to make the first Laser War. And kind of got it up and shooting with the Road King program. But it was really great to see. I saw new flipper designs and crazy levers and LCD screws and backlashes with LCDs and LCDs under the playfield and powder-coated legs. And it's just great to see you all embracing your creativity to make something in your image, you know, with PCs, being at home. I mean, when I started making pinball machines, when Steve and I were making video games, we went from black and white to color. There was no personal PC. It did not exist. Games are made on a VAX PDP-11. You loaded your program and you came back in an hour and saw if it ran. I think Howie Rubin was the first guy to actually ever buy PCs and give it to somebody to work on their desk at Gottlieb back there that day when Boyd Brown was running the company. God, why do I remember that name? He was from the soap business, and he wasn't very good at it. So we watched companies come and go, right? We watched Bally and Williams and Almy. Mike, you and your dad tried with AG. That was a rite of passage for Gottlieb. Every Gottlieb must have a Gottlieb pinball company. It's just a rule. Mark, you tried to start one up at Capcom for a couple years. I mean, it is hard, hard, hard work. Jack, you got a lot of work ahead of you, okay? Reminds me of the old story. For all of you that like pinballs or are trying to make pinball companies out there, reminds me of the lawyer, right? Guy goes to town, he's a single lawyer. They go, how's business? His business is pretty lousy. Second lawyer moves to town. A little while later, somebody goes, how's business? He goes, it's fantastic, right? It's good to see other pinballs. You know, I think the most... And Gary, no disrespect to you or your design team, I think the most fun and creative game I played last night was the game that Dennis Norman and Greg did, the big, juicy, giant melons game. It was fun, right? Didn't have ramps. It didn't have other things. But, you know, you kind of go, that kind of be fun in my bar, kind of fun in my office or something. But it's just, it's what's pinball about, right? It's fun. And on the other hand, last year I bought a Tron LE. I didn't get a discount. But you know what? I used to be immersed in pinball. And Mark, I hope you're finding this to be the case. It's kind of fun to go back to our roots and play pinball again because it's fun. It's fun to see. You know, I go down to the shore in Maryland, and the first thing I do is I go to the arcade down there, and I pray that Gary's newest game is down there because I want to play it. All right, I want to have fun with it. I want to see what the rules are. I want to see how the shots are. You know, I can't wait always to see Steve's next pinball machine, right? I always waited for, whether it was Flash or Black Knight or High Speed, there was always something fun and exciting. I mean, it's so great that you're still making pinballs, Steve, while the rest of us are being bums sitting on the sideline. It's great. So let me try and see if I can make this little slideshow work. And I hope it does work. My years in pinball, I'm not sure where I'm clicking. I think I need to click this guy here. Maybe? No. Yes. No. Well, we'll go to next. Maybe. Bridget, how about if you just push the next button for me, if you don't mind. Or somebody. Okay, so here's a picture. You guys are, oh my God, this is an F-14. There's an F-14 down at Gala Lanes. The first night we went live with Laser War. That is the very first time a Data East game ever went live. That was a light on the top. It was a giant spinning LED bar. Made all this crazy, funky stuff. Let's go to the next one. Yeah, that's a really blurry shot of Laser War. We didn't have good iPhones at the time. We were actually using cameras. Can you turn that light off? Okay. Okay, no problem. We'll just wait a second here. Okay, that's better. That's still a blurry picture of Laser War. But the eye light on top looks really cool, and that did go with the sounds. Next. And yet another picture of it. I notice it's being played, and F-14 isn't. Mm-mm-mm. Next. And that is a young Joe Kamenko next to Laser War. Yep. And, gosh, you know, what were we thinking, starting a pinball company? Next, please. Somebody else playing it. We'll kind of keep going through. And that was the first game I ever sort of kind of tried to make. That was Play Ball for Williams. And that was the first cabinet. So that was the first game, along with Defender Pinball. That is my daughter, who is now 26. That's Richard Ditton, Lou Rudolph. And that was right when we first got it going. Another blurry picture of Laser War. That is Larry DeMar with High Speed, and me. That's a very cool hat. That's me and Richard Ditton. Again, Richard helped put our first game together. By the way, this game was designed Thanksgiving Day in the Rego building in downtown Chicago with no heat on. It was about 28 degrees on vellum with a pencil, Thanksgiving Day, 1986. Here is the very first display animation ever on a dot matrix. That's Jack Lydon, who currently works at IGT, Harry Klein and Lonnie Ropp, 31092. It was actually going to be on Simpsons. The first dot matrix game was actually going to be Simpsons, and Gary and I were told our feet were in wet cement, and if we screwed it up, we'd get fired, so we decided we'd wait a game and do Checkpoint instead, if you remember that, Gary. Next. And Gary. And that's the trade show where we first showed Laser War. We were still building them on the floor that evening. Eugene and Larry and a bunch of other people snuck us parts because we were missing things like flipper rubbers. And Steve, actually, I remember Eugene came down to the trade show with the F-14 and had the chips in chip tubes to try and make the game work. So that's kind of what pinball was back then. That's Lou Rudolph, and that's me. That's our first distributor meeting. You'll see one or two distributor meetings. It was actually held at a Laser Tag here in Chicago when the distributors came in and go, gosh, do we want to take pinball games from another pinball company? And that is the distributors. I see Rich Babbage and a couple others all kind of going, gosh, it's a pinball machine. And that's Gary telling me something that we screwed up, and there's Mr. Fukuda behind us. Yeah, Lou was rolling a joint. Lou said it was always 5 o'clock somewhere. Next. And there's the game. That's when the people got really excited and started climbing on the game. It was really fun. Next. That's Lonnie Ropp. That's I think that was around Hook. It looks like it's a Hook back glass or head at the time. That is the Whitewood for Phantom of the Opera. That is what it looked like, designed by Yed Sabula. And that is my daughter testing it out some point later. Monday Night Football, one of the very first ones we did. And a picture of Lonnie and I think working on Secret Service at the time, and you can see we had the inserts laying on the playfield, trying to figure out the rules, and drawing it on a piece of vellum. No AutoCAD. This is John Borg and his very first game. That is Star Wars. So John came to us. This is the first game. He's still skinny. How the hell do you do it, John? I just don't know. But that is the first Whitewood of John's first game, 7/25/91. How about that, John? Bring back some memories. And that I think, is maybe our 10th anniversary. I don't remember. That's me and Shell and Gary, and we were building Batman at the time. I have to tell you, Kim Bassinger, I have two Batman stories that you'll enjoy. First off, Kim Bassinger was really nice. She was, yeah, that was probably 91. Maybe that was maybe our 10,000th game. I don't remember. There was some reason it was a birthday. I don't remember. I'll have to look closer at the picture. Kim Bassinger actually got a game, and she sent us a very lovely thank you note. She loved her game, and she was very kind. Tommy Lee Jones, when we did Batman Forever, got a pinball machine too. About 6 months later, after that, we received a series of inquiries from Tommy Lee Jones' soon-to-be ex-wife, wanting to know the value of the pinball machine because she was fighting for it. To this day, and I know this is a fact, Tommy Lee Jones does not have the pinball, and his wife still enjoys it. Ex-wife. Okay. This is Jack Lydon, King Jack. That was Jack doing display effects. This is Gary with Batman, I believe in Japan, if I see the background, Mr. Ishikawa, and I think he later died from worms from eating sushi, if I recall.
No,
which one was that that died?
The one that...
Anyway, without getting into any gruesome details, it was disgusting, okay? It was like, Mr. Ishikawa is no longer with us. He has died from eating sushi. Gary, please come and we will take you to dine where he dined. So it was great. Next, ZZ Top. This was at the Back to the Future launch. This was in the launch for Jurassic Park. This is the very rare and famous Kabuki game that Mr. Nakamura from Namco came to me and Gary, and at one point in time, either he owned part of us or was going to own part of us or something. Anyway, for 1 year, I received things about and to study Kabuki. And we personally paid for, and this is a person that Gary and I have known and respect as a leader in who created Pac-Man and other things. And as a salutation, we created this game. Marcus Rothkrantz did the art. And it is Japanese song, Japanese music, and we studied the art of kabuki, of men dressing up as women and singing for about a year, and that is actually him in his office in Tokyo playing the game. Yes. That is Back to the Future, the very first one, which we made in about 6 weeks, being delivered at Universal Studios for the Back to the Future team to look at and review. That's Bob Gale on the right, who wrote Back to the Future. Marianne DeSimone on the left. There's Gary and there's the team and Neil Canton and Bob on the left. And Bob and I have maintained a friendship for all the years since then. So it was a lot of fun. And that is, at the end, we were supposed to get Michael J. Fox, and then he decided at the end not to put his picture on it, so it became Brad Ferris as Marty McFly with really big sunglasses. By the way, Hook, the Hook pinball machine, if you are not aware, my son David is the little Peter Pan. I am the large Peter Pan, and Gary was actually Captain Hook because we liked the brand, but we didn't get Robin Williams. We didn't get Dustin Hoffman. So at the premiere, Dustin Hoffman fell in love with the game. He called Amblin and said, I look fantastic on this game. May I buy three of them? Not realizing he never gave the rights to the game. But at that point in time, I realized Gary and Dustin Hoffman looked like they were separated at birth. Very good, Gary. That is the backlash for a game we almost made based on Mad Magazine. The 12th hour, Gary was concerned it would not sell in the German market, and we pulled the plug on it. So that was done by Marcus Rothkrantz. The pinball was shooting through the play field. He's playing with his toes. It was a pretty fun backlash. Next. There's another picture of it. I think there's a picture of the cabinet, too, somewhere. Do one more. There was what the cabinet looked like. And there should be one more picture. Oh, there's George Takei playing, I think, actually Hook, maybe. I think that's what that is. There's Harry Haraguchi and Hook, and Gary as Captain Hook. Harry, I guess, isn't here this year, but we miss you. And if anybody knows his email, tell him we mentioned him. There is David. If anybody doesn't quite realize, we were going to kind of do a little bit of a funhouse variation with Alfred E. Newman and just decided not to. So David decided to wear that for Halloween that year. Very nice son. Rocky and Bullwinkle, there's Tim Seckel, who was the primary designer of Rocky and Bullwinkle at the trade show at Dad East. That's a very collectible game. 4,400 Star Treks. If you note, on the left side is Ed Cibula, Jimmy Gorman, Tim Seckel, some old friends. Arnie Arstad. I'm going to tell you about Arnie Arstad. I don't know if anybody know Arnie.
Yeah.
Let me tell you. Arnie's a first-class guy. We had a point of time where the company was going through and contracting, and we were having a hard time through one of the many times we went through hard times. And Gary was going to keep Arnie because he was the senior guy. And Arnie said, shoot me instead. The guy who works beside me has a family. I'll take care of myself. And that's the kind of guy Arnie Arstad is. So if you ever see Arnie, you pat him on the back. You volunteer. Next. That is me holding a pop bumper cap in my mouth for some reason. And Shelley, I don't know what you're holding there. Lethal Weapon 3, that's the 10,000th game that went down the playfield, down the line. 10,992. 10,300 of those. 10,350 Star Wars followed. 9,700 Jurassic Parks. We had a pretty good year that year. If you can think about it, Gary, we did almost 30,000 pinball machines in a one-year period of time. That was the Whitewood for the game. John Norris. If anybody remembers John Norris, that's John's first game with us, 12-1897. John Norris is working at IGT. I gave him a job about a year ago. He works in quality control, does game testing. So John's doing okay. And Lonnie Ropp. And Lonnie Ropp as Elvis, not knowing that he would later do a Elvis game years later, but there's Lonnie as Elvis. There's Borgie and Phyllis and Joe Balser, who I think was having an epileptic seizure at that time on the right. That's the Apollo 13 game, the first game. Death Ball 2000, which was made specifically for a few of you here. We did a tour through the factory. We mocked up this fake back glass. And everybody, because there was this report of Wuntan Suntang in the world news report that this Taiwanese mastermind had created this pinball machine that would send 10,000 gigawatts through a player, and they were dying right and left. So Gary and I put these two giant handles on the game, put that there, and told everyone that the expo that we had licensed the game from him and wanted to know who was going to be the first to play. It was very fun. Okay. Don't hassle the Hoff. Okay? David Hasselhoff. Now, there's a picture. Now, before you go forward, we had a problem with this game. Pamela Anderson was the girl of the year in that red bathing suit. And David's agent and David were having a problem, and they kept not approving the artwork, and we kept having to make David's head larger and larger and larger and larger because he was afraid he was being overshadowed by her assets. Next picture. Oh, go back. Go back, I'm sorry. Go back one. We can do that. I think we skipped it or maybe it's not there. Anyway, there's a giant picture of David's head next to the giant picture of David's head on the game. Oh, that's this day. Well, I'll show you this. This was something we just goofed around with once. No Rob, no Mike. It doesn't exist. You can't sell it for money. It was just a game we were goofing around with. Gary had talked about his Orbiter game, and one day we just took out some clay and just kind of screwed around with a ramp and curvy and freeform, how would it play? Next, let's do the next picture. No, I think we missed one. Let's go back. Go back one. That's Tommy. No, we missed one. Keep go back one more. Let's see if we can go back one more. There's Hasselhoff. Okay, let's go to Star Wars next. This was the limited edition game that we did very, very quickly. Ended up in Neiman Marcus and on Taco Bell. That's at Lucas Ranch. Next. That's Michael Chevers, who was the star of Tommy. That's the Tommy game in New York. Eric Winston in the back left corner. Eric is also working at IGT, still to this day. Next. That is the show where we got sued. This is the beginning of the Great Pinball War, the Great Pinball Lawsuit. We were sued for using the word multi-ball. In about 5 minutes, we changed it to tri-ball. And we had tri-ball at that show. Hence the Great Pinball War. Looking back on it, we probably all should have just closed all the factories but one of them and all made all of our games with all the same parts in one factory and probably would have been more pinball companies today. Yeah, Joe Dillon, and I think that's Lonnie Ropp, Johnny Borg's game. Next. There you go. There's David with a life-size head on the back box. I still look at her boobs, but pretty fun. There's Phyllis waving at everybody when we were making one of our redemption games that she was happy at. That was kind of Phyllis's, you know, how are you this morning, Phyllis? I'm fine. How are you? Next. We made a lot of novelty games. You know, we made Cut the Cheese and Sega Sports and Gary with Tom Hanks. Tom is going to go back. Why the hell wasn't I on the pinball machine? Because your agent said you're a serious actor now and pinball machines aren't good. You need to turn those lights back off. Hello, somebody? Congratulations. You are all now being exposed to bright light. You're all in the Kevin Bacon game. You all know me. There's Kevin Bacon. You are all now a degree away from Kevin Bacon. Congratulations. And now all your friends are in the game. All your Facebook friends are in the game. Okay. There's Kevin. He was pretty cool, and so was Bill Paxton to work with. Brian Schmidt, Orrin Day. Next. Hope you're enjoying these pictures. That was a Batman show, the Batman world premiere, with some just random playfield thrown out there for decoration. I just always kind of like that picture. That's Batman at the world premiere, and I think there's a picture of Gary and Paul Leslie. Next. Paul was at Williams for a couple years with their pinball group. I'm not sure what Gary's doing. He's doing like a throwdown move or something. Next. Brian Rudolph, Eric, Rob Hurtado. That's one of our games online. I'm trying to remember. We can't quite tell which one that was. That is Slash and everybody else giving everybody the bird. Slash was a pretty cool guy. You know, Borgie and I had a lot of fun. Now, you guys all remember Ed Zabola. You couldn't understand Ed half the time. Now, Ed was not at times a man of great patience, and Slash was supposed to show up at 10 in the morning. Now, right, the rock star, little did I know. Now, Ed got to work every morning at about 6 o'clock. He left every day about 4. Well, the clock kept going. It's now, you know, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock. Where's this guy going to come, you know? He shows up at 6:30. At this point in time, Ed is ready to take out a hatchet and kill him. You're laughing. But Slash was pretty cool. A lot of bourbon. Got drunk at the office that evening, though it was a non-drinking policy. It happened. And the G and the R on the ramp actually came up from Slash. And Borgie figured out how to make a G and an R out of it. So if you ever look at the Guns N' Roses game, there's a G and an R. Now, I will tell you a great story about Slash. We kind of actually became pretty friendly with him. We kind of hang out with him. I was with him and Johnny Depp, River Phoenix, Christina Applegate, the night before River Phoenix died at the Viper Room. It was a very interesting evening. We were kind of hanging out till like 4 in the morning. Cheap Trick was there, and Slash was playing with Cheap Trick. The best story is Slash had a menagerie of animals at his house. Now remember the big Northridge earthquake? Well, he had all these terrariums full of, you know, viper snakes and things. Well, all the terrariums cracked and all the snakes got out. But that wasn't the best story. The best story was Slash had a real cougar. Now, John Borg may tell it differently. But John is sitting in the chair and that little pussycat comes up to John and kind of jumps up and puts its claws and its paws right around John's neck. And then it goes to give him a kiss. It takes its mouth, it opens up its mouth, and it puts its mouth, it's kind of sideways. Well, what I'm trying to say in a delicate way, it put John's neck in his mouth. Now, I have never seen someone break out in a sweat or turn as white as a ghost as John Borg did. And I'm going, Slash, you know, Slash, it's gonna fucking eat John, okay? So he got the cat off of John's throat. He recovered. He drank some booze. Never, ever went back to Slash's house again. Okay. Crash test dummies was something we screwed around with. It was actually a thing we looked at one point in time. Kind of might have been fun. I think we showed that at Expo. I don't know what year that was, but that was an Expo drawing. That is the tombstone headstone that we never made. But, you know, one of our customers was like, hey, I think maybe it was Roger Duba. We can do something better. We can make something look like a tombstone. And Gary's like, are you telling me pinball is dead? Was not a good thing for the art of the game. Next. Sega Sports, one of the many novelty games we made at the company very successfully. And I think there's one thing we need to click on here. We go back one. There's a thing I need to get down to the bottom. I want to give you a little peek of what we're doing next. So if you can't wait to play Jack's Pinball whenever Jack makes it, we're waiting, Jack. We're waiting. The game based off The Wizard of Oz will be on Facebook next week. And if you've ever built a game that is amazing as a city builder, this is what Larry and I have been doing for the past 2 years. So, and tonight, I have 30 beta keys to give away. Whoever wants the first 30 beta keys, you can get it and play it before we reset the world in about a week. The game is quite amazing. It uses we can turn the lights back up, the 3D Unity engine, and it's, if you've ever played Farmville or Cityville or anything like this, it just simply smokes it. It kills it. Jack, I was just kidding, of course. Let me talk about business in general. I just want to leave you guys with a couple of thoughts. You know, I talk to a lot of people, a lot of young people, about, you know, how to be successful in business. And I'll give you just a couple things, a couple thoughts. You know, Lou Wilson, a few of you remember Lou Wilson. I was about 22 years old. He was Mike Stroll's brother-in-law. Lou died of cancer a couple of years ago. Lou missed the golden age of digital media because I remember Lou going by his office, and he was our media guy and our video guy, but Lou read more magazines than anybody I ever knew, and if he had only had Google, man, he would have loved it. But he grabbed me one day. This is one of the Black Fridays where, you know, we had just kind of made shown Star Rider. The company wasn't doing so well, and you guys know the story. You know, it was Sorcerer and Space Shuttle as a 1-2 combination that kind of got the company back on its feet. And Lou pulled me aside one day and said, kid, I'm going to teach you the 8 most important words in business, or 9 most important words in business. It was, I'm in trouble, I need your help, please. So to this day, I teach everybody, I'm in trouble, I need your help, please. Because if you ask somebody to do that and you tell them that, they'll help you, but you will have to help them one day. Thank you and please is also a great thing to remember in everything you do every day. You know, fear can paralyze us in business. Less fear is less failure, I guess. Business is a series of challenges, conflicts, resolutions, and then to figure out what happens next, right? So I'll tell you one story. One last story before we call it a night. Because when you work and you make a pinball machine, as Gary does, as George Gomez does, as Steve does, as Joe Bosser does, as some of the guys that work at Spooky Cool Labs do, if I ask anyone in this room, anybody here play golf? Put your hands up if you play golf. Okay, if I told you guys I could take 5 strokes off of your game, if you gave me an afternoon, would you take that time with me? Hands again? Okay. There's nothing I can do to take 5 strokes off your game magically. Because, you know, you think about golf. The greatest golfers in the world play for 3 or 4 days, and often it comes down to 1 stroke that sometimes separates them from losing a match and being a champion, right? But if I told you I could help your golf game by helping you drive a little further, a little straighter, maybe that'll take a stroke off your game, or putt a little bit better, or measure up and get the right club and chip a little bit better, you would take that advice. And that's what the great pinball designers do. That's what Mark does. That's what Greg Kmik did. That's what Steve Ritchie does. That's what John Borg does. They take every game and they take a little extra effort. They take a little more attention to every detail. You know, Steve is notorious, right? He has had guys running out of his office screaming, "Oh my God, he's killing me!" And the reason he does that is because Steve knows in his mind, if he doesn't do that one last tweak of the software, that one last adjustment of the color, that one last extra sound, the game will never, ever be as good as he wants it to be. And that's what determines greatness in everything we do. Right? It is that one plus thing you do during a day. It's when you tell your employees, give me one more thing today that you would put off till tomorrow and make it great and make it better. Right? You can take that forward. I don't care whether it's the pinball business or the printing business or whatever it happens to be. If you take that lesson forward, mediocrity is not a sin, but it's not good enough. We are going through that right now as we complete our Wizard of Oz project. After 20 months, 70 employees, and $10 million, we're working 19-hour days and tweaking every last little thing, because when this thing comes out, we want it to be the best game that has ever been on Facebook. Not by a little bit, not by a smidgen, but just ever. We have had people look at this game and said it's the best game they have ever seen. And I look forward to hearing from you all when you get a chance to play it. So anyway, thank you for taking your time tonight to allow me to ramble on about the first like button, about friends gone by, about things we've done. I had a chance to autograph a book this evening. There was someone brought a picture over, my friend from Washington, and said, "Will you sign? There's a picture of you and Gary. Will you sign this picture?" And the best thing that happened to me today, besides spending time with my two sons that are here, was I wrote on the book, "I love you, Gary Stern." And Gary wrote back, "I love you, Joe Kam & Co." So that's my takeaway from today. And keep flipping, okay? You know, we got a bunch of, I don't see a lot of kids in this audience, except for one on the left over here. We do need to remind a generation there is something to do with this crazy ball that Harry used to go as wild, and Sam used to go, "This is wild. Ball's going to go wherever it's going to go." We play with this. Oh, there's another one right there, and it's a girl. High five. Give me the bump. Let's go. Give me the bump. All right. My eyes stink. I can't see that far back anymore. But tell your friend, pinball's cool. You know, get their head out of Facebook, except when they're playing Wizard of Oz. You know, remind people there's this thing called gravity that's really fun, and mass and weight, and it's really, really great. I will end with one last story. John and I were laughing about it. Now, I love Ed Cibula. Ed Cibula, my heart, you know, Ed and Sarah, you know, he was my mentor, okay? Gary was my mentor, but Ed was also my mentor. And God love Ed, you know, as we grew into more and more and more levels, you know, the balls just seemed to find ball traps everywhere. And I remember one day we were put in Jurassic Park, or maybe it was Apollo 13, what game was it, Borgie? Jurassic Park, and Joe Balser, I don't know if Joe's here, but Joe was in one of his ornery moods. You know, Ed came in. Ed, of course, left at 4, comes in at 6 in the morning. Joe had kind of placed the pinball in every place the ball could possibly hang up that there was a ball trap. And there were about 25 pinballs on the rotisserie where the game was when Ed got in that next morning. The idea for Apollo 13 came from Ed taking that game, hitting the handle, and all 25 balls flying off into free space at one moment, if you remember that, Borgie. And it was sort of like the Christmas story, that stream of obscenities that came out of his mouth after that. But it's kind of fun to remember those moments. Thank you all for letting me talk to you tonight. And next time I promise I'll find some better pictures. But, you know, Michael's book has a lot of great pictures. I sent him a lot of things that were special that I knew he would publish for not just me to enjoy, but for others to enjoy. And, you know, all I can say is long live pinball, and thank you, and good night.